You don't have to wait till you're in your car to hear what Cap and J-Hood are talking about. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
With Connor, I'm Cap. Hoodie back on Thursday. Danny JR here. Meller is filling in on the middays. 312-332-3776. Chuck Garfine. We like to call him our Chuck around the office. He joins us. He is our White Sox insider, and he joins us right now here on the Cap J Hood Show on ESPN 1000. By the way, watch us on Twitch. Twitch.tv/ESPN1000. Chicago. Our Chuck, good morning. How are you, Sparky?
Oh, I'm good. I'm great. We have real baseball 2 days away. I cannot wait. Well, it's almost like 2.5 because the White Sox are playing at night. But, man, it's just awesome. We made it. We got here. Let's talk some ball.
Okay, let's talk some ball. So are the White Sox actively pursuing somebody to play left field that Eloy Jimenez is now probably out for the year?
Right now, the priority is let's see what we have internally. And I know it was a shock to a lot of people when Tony La Russa said, yeah, we're going to give Andrew Vaughn a shot, give him a couple of games to see what he can do. They were having him taking fly balls in left field weeks ago before Eloy Jimenez got injured. So I think what they want to do is they need something to carry them until they get Adam Engel back, which is the middle of April. So that's going to be Andrew Vaughn, some Leury Garcia in left as well. And then you get Engel back. That's a great defensive outfield, by the way. And I think they're going to let things play out a bit. And they're going to decide if they need another hitter in left field. If Vaughn doesn't work out, if Garcia's not working out, Engel's not working out, then they'll look externally. But the priority right now, I think they're looking around for external candidates just in case, but I think they're going to go into the season with what they have internally. And now there's a report, John Heyman was saying that Eloy Jimenez might be back a month sooner from a second opinion. So things are feeling a little bit better on the Eloy Jimenez side too.
I also saw a report that the White Sox may be in agreement with Jake Lamb. He's pending waivers, though. I just wonder how active, Chuck, you think they're going to be once teams start making their cuts. The White Sox have reportedly already made one with Jonathan Lucroy. It doesn't necessarily have to be a guy that's a left fielder in order to fill out depth for this team to start the year, does it?
No, it doesn't. And, you know, Jake Lamb is a left-handed hitter. He's, knows Tony. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, here's a guy who, 2017 is 4 years ago. Feels like 20 years ago at this mm-hmm. point because of the pandemic. But anyway, 30 home runs, 105 RBIs. And the year before, maybe 2016, he did that. And then he's hit 25 or more home runs twice. So this is a guy who, you know, if the report is true and he clears waivers, a veteran off the bench that you can use. I was personally, if John Lucroy is, you know, has asked for his release and didn't make the opening day roster, personally a little surprised that I figured he'd come in, and because of his experience, he's healthy now, he would get a spot on this team. But I also realized looking back that he didn't really lose the job as a backup catcher. Yermin Mercedes and Zach Collins won spots on this roster. And I know I'm changing the subject a little bit here, but that's on my mind here today, how those two guys, because of Yasmani Grandal getting hurt, were given the opportunities, more games to catch Giolito and Keuchel and Lynn and all these bullpen arms, and they got to see all the improvements that they've made. If this is true that it's Mercedes and Collins making the team and not Lucroy, I think that's the reason why.
Chuck, you're not changing the topic. You're just teasing the next one. That's exactly where I want to go here with this backup catcher conversation. Collins defensively has looked a lot better to me. And I wonder how much the White Sox at this point are willing to say, okay, let's make a press on offense. Lucroy defensively can do what he does, but with the bat, we understand where he's at in his career. Let's push in for a little bit more offense.
Chuck told me in the newsroom, hey, kid, don't count out Lucroy, man. He looks way better than he did with you guys. What happened, Chuck?
Well, what happened with Lucroy or Collins?
Lucroy. The guy you and I were arguing about in the newsroom.
So we were having an argument about this?
We were having a spirited debate when I told you, he stinks, he's done.
Okay, so all right, so here's the thing with Lucroy. He played for like six teams in 2 years. Everybody wanted Lucroy on their team because, by the way, this guy's going to be a manager one day. When you hear him talk, this guy is like one-way ticket to being a coach / manager in baseball in the near future. But he wasn't healthy. He had this herniated disc in his neck, and all these teams wanted him because they're like, they know what he can do, but he just wasn't able to do it. So the Sox signed him. He's healthy. He looked good. I mean, he had great plate discipline, five walks and one strikeout. And he wasn't getting any, you know, home runs, RBIs, things like that. But the pitchers liked working with him. So I figured he's going to get the job. But the other thing is the White Sox invested and developed Yermín Mercedes and Zach Collins. And if they're, like, ready to go or almost ready to go, you know, there is an argument to be made that's like, you know what, we like Jonathan Lucroy, but, you know, let's give these two guys – a shot. We believe in them. And like Zach Collins offensively is finally becoming that player that he wanted to be. And he said to me last year and 2 years ago, because he was barely playing, he came up to the plate trying to hit a home run every time because he's like, well, I'm only playing once a week. I got to do something here. Terrible. That's not the way you want to try to succeed in Major League Baseball to do that. But he was put in that situation. No fault of his own. It's just the White Sox are ready to win, and they couldn't have Zach Collins run out there 5 days a week. So I think what a lot of this, we haven't heard from the Sox on this, but if this is where this is all going, I think it's more of we believe in Collins, we believe in Mercedes. They've gotten better behind the plate. They've gotten better at the plate, and we're going to run with these guys. And listen, for the first time in the history of this franchise, they have enormous depth at catcher. I never thought I would say it. Some team's going to get Lucroy, and I think Lucroy still has something left in him, but I think they feel like there's greater upside with what Collins and Mercedes can do, not only this year, but going forward.
Talking with Chuck Garfine, NBC Sports Chicago. Wondering, Chuck, we had Tim Anderson on the broadcast Len and I did on Sunday, and Tim mentioned that Garrett Crochet was the guy he hated facing most, and then Len asked him if it was the fastball or slider that got him, and he said both. They're both terrible, and I hate hitting against the guy. Is Crochet the guy that's most interesting to you out of the bullpen, or is it still Kopech? What's the level of variable that you're seeing from both guys and how they're going to be used?
Well, it's funny because it's an embarrassment of riches for this bullpen because there's just so many options for Tony La Russa to go to. I would call it a tie between Crochet and Kopech, just because one's righty, one's lefty, they both have these arms that can throw triple digits. It does seem like Crochet might be a little more polished than Kopech right now, just because Kopech hasn't, you know, pitched as much, but they both look really good in spring. And there's Aaron Bummer and Liam Hendricks and Cody Hoyer, who could be a closer on like half the teams in baseball, and Hoyer is like the fourth best option in this bullpen. So I've said it before, I don't think I've ever tuned into a baseball game to watch a bullpen. This White Sox bullpen, like, you don't want to watch, you know, you tune in to watch Abreu, Tim Anderson, whether, you know, Giolito. I'm just as interested in watching how Tony La Russa operates this bullpen because they're going to shorten games to such an extent where they're just going to win a lot of games by default because even if they're down three runs in the fifth or four runs in the fifth and the starter doesn't have it that day, for the most part, this bullpen is going to lock it down and it's going to give the offense four or five innings to come back and try to win it. So but to get back to your initial question, I just think I'm intrigued by it all. And they're all amazing stories. Crochet, how he went straight essentially from college, barely playing his senior year, to the majors and the playoffs, and excelling. And then Michael Kopech, his whole story, and he's back, and what they're going to do. I think one inning, two inning stints, three inning stints as the season goes on, maybe with Kopech. I think it's going to be a gradual process to see how they're going to be used. But I think all options are on the table for what La Russa can do with both of them.
We're talking to Chuck Garfine. He's our White Sox insider. He also is the star over at NBC Sports Chicago covering
White Sox. You are the star.
Yeah, okay.
Cap, you are the star. I'm the moon.
You are our Chuck. I've got to ask you about the realistic expectations. I have always lived by the mantra, Danny pointed it out earlier, that if you have a realistic championship team, the Dodgers, the Yankees, the White Sox, among others, I'm not talking about if the Mariners win 88 games, lose in the first round of the playoffs. They had a successful year. They weren't built to win the title this year. The White Sox are. Do you believe, even with the injury, this team's good enough to win the World Series?
This team is, I'll put it this way, this team can win the World Series. They can win the World Series. And I haven't been able to say that since 2006. So I would say that, you know, even with the injury, well, listen, what they need to do, if you're so concerned about Eloy Jimenez, they just need, if say Jimenez comes back end of August, and if the report is true, he might get back even or sooner than that, but say it's the end of August, say it's September, and he can come back and be something like he was. I mean, this is a big, you know, injury, but if he can have that power right away, you know, you're talking about a team, if you can be in contention and you get Eloy Jimenez back, you know, that's a non-factor about the injury. And I think this team, it's a big loss. If it was a starting pitcher, I'd be more concerned, but I think they will be able to be just fine without him. It sucks that Jimenez isn't going to be there, certainly for the first few months, but I do think this team can win the World Series. They just got to get in the playoffs. And for that also to happen, you need Cease or Rodon or both of them to take a big step forward. If that happens, this team can beat anybody. The Dodgers obviously are the cream of the crop. But as we've seen, get to the playoffs, anything can happen. They're going to need more than three starters for them to really win a World Series. So if it's Cease or Rodon taking the next step, and I have full faith in this offense, I think the White Sox can win the World Series in 2021.
Yeah, I'm with you. For me, the story has been a lot of storylines for the White Sox in spring, but Carlos Rodon's spring in any other year gets a lot more headlines than it has. I wonder what struck you most about his last month.
Well, I just talked to him on the White Sox Talk podcast, and he said that he's never had fastball command like this ever in his career. That's what he said. Part of it is he's healthy for the first time since 2018. The other part is that Ethan Katz, the new pitching coach, came in and he's really been working on his lower half, and that has kind of like been this like it's like a
working on mine too.
Yeah, it's like a tree trunk, like where he has a better foundation below him and he can command his fastball better. I watched him strike out Manny Machado in Peoria in spring training, and he just blazed this like 97 mile an hour fastball right by him. And he said that was like a moment where he's like, you know, Mercedes was catching him and Mercedes called for the fastball. And I think it was like a 3-2 count. And Carlos was like, all right, I don't know what fastball I've got for Manny Machado, but he just, you know, fired it and blew it right by him. And he's like, whoa, okay. I've got this velocity back in me on the mound that could blow it by Manny Machado. So that was spring training. Let's, you know, it's like this thing goes in stages. Let's see if this Carlos Rodon we saw in spring training, that translates to the regular season. And, you know, if that does, I mean, Carlos Rodon is your number five? Is your number five? I'll take that.
Hey, man, have a great rest of your day. I'll see you around the plant, okay?
All right, see you guys.
See you.
Talk to you later.
There
see
he is, the great Chuck Garfine. He'll be with us each and every week throughout all the different shows here on ESPN 1000. Anthony Rizzo on his contract situation and what the future holds for him. Next.
K-9. Cap. J-Hook.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Watch the show on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago.
So Anthony Rizzo had his final Zoom session of the spring, flew back to Chicago last night, couple days off, and then Thursday, crank it up. First of all, and by the way, Jeff Meller's at the controls now. Meller, nice to see you, man. I haven't seen you in a while. You passed me in the hall, but you were gone. How was your trip? You good?
Anthony Rizzo's contract extension be damned. Yeah, I'm doing well.
So I wanted to ask you a baseball question.
You do know that Meller was in crosstalk with you yesterday.
Man,
that
was, I'm talking about on this
that
show.
That was 21 Danny. Hours ago.
All right, just, you're like, I haven't seen you in the hallway, and yet you did crosstalk with him for 20 minutes.
He was gone. I thought he was still on vacation.
Where'd you go?
Skiing.
What do you mean you did crosstalk? What do you mean you thought he was still on vacation skiing?
No, yesterday I thought he was still on vacation. When I saw him, I'm like, whoa, what are you doing here?
Yeah, you were surprised when I was in the hallway.
Yeah, take that's that, true. Danny.
I'm so confused right now.
Me too.
Anyway, I'm lost.
Meller is my...
I went to Colorado.
Meller is Connor. Good. My baseball guy, and Anthony Rizzo spoke on his contract yesterday, feels he's being lowballed, which he is. Do you understand his perspective, and do you understand the Cubs' perspective lowballing him?
Lowball is in the eye of the beholder, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, Anthony Rizzo wants more money, and he probably, you know, when he looks at it from his perspective, he's like, well, look what I've done for this organization. I'm sure Jed Hoyer looks at it in the sense and says, yeah, but I'm not going to lock you up to a long-term deal because that's just not the way smart baseball teams do business. Like, yeah, I'm sorry, you're over the age of 30, Anthony. So if there's, you know, you don't want to pay for past performance because if you're a Cubs fan, certainly you love what Anthony Rizzo has done for you. I'm sure most Cubs fans want to see him retire in a Cubs uniform. But at the same time, can you put yourself in a situation where 4 years from now, you're on the hook for $25 million a year because Anthony Rizzo didn't want to be lowballed?
No, I'm saying...
And he's not producing at the plate the way he once did.
Well, the St. Louis Cardinals don't look at it that way. They gave Yadier Molina $20 million a year when he was no longer the best catcher in the sport. Salvador Perez, who is on the other side of 30, they just gave him 4 years and over $80 million because they said what this guy means to our franchise, that's fair.
Yeah, but the Sal Perez is not the exact same. He's still a little younger than what Anthony Rizzo is. And I don't know what
he's
don't
30.
Know.
What, Sal Perez will be 30 at some point this season.
What's the number that Anthony Rizzo is looking for?
I would think he would sign 5 and 100. He's making $16 million.
I mean, that contract doesn't stop you from building a champion.
It doesn't.
Either
and you're
22
telling me
or 23
what he's done, he gets a pay cut?
I don't know. I'm saying, like, if you're building, if you're a GM and you're cutthroat and you're looking at it like, do I want to lock up first base for an extended period of time when, in all likelihood, Anthony Rizzo's numbers are going to begin to decline, if they haven't already?
I'm okay locking up first base as a position. I think that's an interesting point, Jeff. Like, the prospects you got in the Darvish trade, they shouldn't play first base.
No, of course.
The guys you're going to draft in the first round, the White Sox taking Andrew Vaughn at 3 kind of is the exception that proves the rule.
Because he's
right?
An
you
elite
don't take
bat at
an
3.
Elite
you
bat.
Mean starting left fielder, Andrew Vaughn?
Also
correct.
That. That's going to be a... We're going to watch...
It can't be worse than what was out there last year, though,
we're
in left field.
We're going to watch a fly... We're going to hear Len call fly ball to left. And that will be interesting for Sox fans. Like, you're going to have to watch the fly ball to left and figure it out. It's just one extra thing. Still, though, like, first base on a contract, there are a lot of teams that do that. You know, I mean, the Angels didn't hesitate at pulling the trigger on an Albert Pujols steal. And quite honestly... I know you're going to look at this.
And that's worked out well.
That contract hasn't stopped them from winning. It's developing pitching that has.
Correct. That is correct.
You can get around one bad... Every single baseball team can get around one bad contract.
But wait, look at the way you're framing that. You're right, Connor. Certainly you can always work around bad money. But do you want... You don't want to put yourself in a position where from day one you're signing a contract if you're a team and you're saying...
Okay, then don't talk
don't
to me about
it. They
culture.
Did with John Lester.
Don't talk to me about the Cubs' way. John Lester came to them and said, I'll take $2 million less than than the Nationals are offering. Nah, we can't do that. But the Cardinals found a way to pay a 39-year-old Adam Wainwright almost $10 million.
Remember what the conversation was when John Lester signed with the Chicago Cubs for the money and length that he did. Immediately it was, this is great. The Cubs are taking their shot at winning. It's maybe even a year early. And everybody knows this contract won't age well because it won't. And people were fine with it.
Correct.
That's how that works. Talk to me about those contracts. Look,
see, but I disagree though. The Lester, like the price of poker for a starter who's going to front your rotation is and who's had a pedigree like Lester had when he was entering free agency. You're going to be in the $100+ million, close to $200 million. That's kind of the game for starting pitching. And you're right, Connor. With arms, you've always got the injury that's could make that a potential sunk cost at some point. With hitters, though, the way velocity is in this game, and with the filthy sliders that you have to account for as well, it's so difficult now as you age. I feel like it's been accelerated, the aging progression, and I don't really love the idea of locking up a bat in their 30 for a long term if I can avoid. And I don't know what kind of financial constraints Jed Hoyer is working with, too. He knows those that we don't.
Yeah, that's the unspoken thing here is clearly Jed Hoyer has a number he has to meet. I don't think you make that Yu Darvish trade without knowing that you have some numbers you have to satisfy.
Right, but after this year, they've got a ton of money off the books.
Of course they do, but apparently they want to sign Javi Baez. Then now, at that point, we're going to have a conversation about what kind of money you sign a 29-year-old shortstop to, whose primary value is defense, and how long can he stay at shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
It's a valid conversation. Same conversation with Chris Bryant. How long can he stay at third base and be a decent enough defender? Does he rebound from those injuries, and does he shift over to left or right field? You have to have that exact conversation about each one of those players when it comes to an extension. And I'm telling you here and now that the guy that's most likely to be cost appropriate and have a high floor is probably Anthony Rizzo. If you're left-handed and you hit right-handers for power, regardless of the other numbers, you hit right-handers for power in this league, you can have a job for a very long time.
Very long time. And don't talk to me about we want to have the right culture and the Cubs, and then the guy who does literally everything perfectly. I'm talking about off the field.
Sure.
And is an outstanding player and is a great defender. Yeah, I don't know. Low ball them. See what we can get. That's embarrassing. Your franchise is worth $3.3 billion. You put it best. His contract is not going to stand in the way of you doing anything you want to do. Period.
No, not if he's willing to be at 5 and 100.
Correct.
And apparently that's... And look, Goldschmidt was what? Five
for 130.
If you structure it right with a little deferred money, you could get there and be fine, too.
Correct. No question.
It would help. It would help developed some pitching.
I need the numbers. I need to know the numbers before I can really, intelligently.
They offered him 5 for 70. He's looking more like 5 for 100.
And again, though, I don't know what Jed is thinking long term. I don't know what Tom Ricketts has told him he can and can't spend going forward. You guys are right. Anthony Rizzo for 5 for 100 is not going to, hamstring your franchise in the future unless you have operating costs.
Would you pay Lindor? He's
325.
10 for 325, and he wants 12 for 385. And there are people saying he's going to turn this down. I can't believe he will, but there are people in New York saying that.
Yeah, I think Lindor has always wanted to go to free agency. That's the sense of it I get. He's always wanted to go to free agency, and I think that's as much a piece of the conversation here.
You're going to be paying him at age 39,
yeah,
for a shortstop,
and you know that. Listen, given Lindor's track record, even the Tatis deal, you're taking the last 3 years of that contract and going, it's fine. Guys are going to be so much more expensive at that point than they are now.
Correct.
He provides the value here. And we got a team built around him. The best way to avoid a contract like that, hamstringing you down the line, is to develop young and cheap players.
Which the Cubs have done a very poor job at.
They do not have much homegrown pitching at all. Yes.
They have none.
It's James Norwood, right? He's the only guy they've drafted that has thrown some significant... Dylan Maples.
Okay. I'm talking about
not much.
Impact.
No, it's not much.
Nothing. Shot or no shot is next.
This is Cap and Jay Hood. Enjoy the show each morning in your Instagrammies. At Cap Jay Hood on Instagram.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN 1000.
That's why I see
Shot. No shot. With Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
That's why.
Hey, Shot No Shot brought to you by PointsBet. PointsBet Sportsbook is here. Visit us at Hawthorne Racecourse. Experience Illinois' premium sportsbook. First, download the PointsBet app. We'll give you $100 in free bets when you deposit $20 with the code ESPN. Danny.
Gentlemen, the NFL owners are scheduled to vote on an expected schedule expansion during their virtual meetings taking place today and tomorrow. Several NFL standout players shared their displeasure about the likely move over Twitter and social media this weekend. The league has played a 16-game regular season since 1978. So I ask you two, shot or no shot, a 17-game regular season in the NFL is the best thing for all involved.
Go ahead.
I'm going to say no shot, but it's because of how that 17-game season is going to be ooched onto the players. You know, I don't – this is going to be a thing where they get a prorated check for however long they're – how long does their CBA last for, Danny? Do you remember how long that is? Is it three more years, four more years?
I thought it was up after this year.
The NFL CBA is?
I thought so.
I'll tell you right now.
All right, well, that's definitely a look-up question. I probably should have looked it up before the break. Either way. It's bad work by me. Shame on you. Still, this is just going to be pushed on players, and people that are going to benefit most are not the guys putting their body at risk one more time in the season.
The new collective bargaining ensures labor peace through at least 2030.
Yeah, they had a long one signed, I thought.
Correct. The vote was tight. 1,019 yeses, 959 no votes, but it is through 2030.
It was set to expire, and then as COVID
hit
March, all of a sudden you had a vote.
Yeah.
Correct.
They took advantage of the players' inability to know what was going to come down the pipeline, just like the rest of us.
Okay, whether
good for them, the owners.
Whether they're already locked in or not, the salary cap is going to go up massively because of all these new deals. They are going
you
to
mean the media deals?
The media TV deals, correct. I will say shot. And if you ask Yurko when he comes back, Yurko will tell you, hey, man, as long as the players are going to make more money, I'm okay with it.
Danny, do you know if the vote to go to 17 games is the same vote they'll take on the length of the preseason? Are they linked?
They are linked. So if it goes to 17 games, the preseason goes to three.
So it won't be two separate votes. Say aye for 17, now say aye for three. Okay.
Correct. From everything I read, they'll be one in the same.
At least there's that. I mean, from the player's perspective, there shouldn't be.
Yeah, but in that fourth preseason game, which ideally is the one they're getting rid of, the players that are actually voicing their concern about this don't even suit up. You know, they don't even play. Alvin Kamara, who was so upset about it this weekend, is not playing in preseason game number four.
No, that's true, but it doesn't matter. I mean, from a, you know, from a math, it doesn't matter which one you cut. It's just the last one will now be the last one. You know what I mean?
Yes.
The number of snaps Kamara was going to take in a four-game preseason will be the same as he was going to take in a three-game.
Yes, correct. But now he's going to take more snaps in the regular season. So
no doubt about it.
His body's going through more in a regular season than it normally would.
It's not great. They should. There's more than just one more check that ought to go to players who have current contracts for one more regular season game, my opinion.
But you know what? Sometimes I feel like that's much ado about nothing in the sense that there's an extra game in a normal regular season, and there will be an additional pounding that every player is going to take. But the reality is there's also going to be a large chunk of money for that 17th game that wouldn't have been there. And when you look at the average lifespan of an NFL player, for most it's less than 3 years. You know, it doesn't seem like that because we all think of the quarterbacks who are there forever. But for the average guy who's there for less than 3 years, and so he's not worried about a 10, 12-year career where he's going to have an additional game every year for that, you know, portion of his career. It's the guy who plays 2.7 years is going to have two extra game checks that he wouldn't have if it was just a 16-game season.
Yeah, I mean, unless the devil's advocate is, though, that 17th game costs him the points 7 years. You know, he picks up whatever injury or nick or something like that, or the extra game allows a team to see one more player that looks a little bit better than him, and he comes and takes his job that might not have had otherwise.
It is what it is.
Yeah, it's a labor thing. That's why there should be, by the way, Jeff, that's why there should be a separate quarterback salary cap in the NFL.
I would have no problem with that. No problem.
That's my idea.
It's a good idea. I like that idea.
That's my idea. It should be a separate cap.
Yeah, they talked about that on NFL Network last week, and there were some guys vehemently against it, and there were others that thought it was an interesting, intriguing
idea. Yeah, when you
idea.
Have a brilliant idea, there are gonna people that are vehemently against it. That's right. What happens when you come up with brilliance.
People were vehemently against the internet. I love it, Connor, and I hope on the NFL Network they credited you.
You know what else people hated? Sliced bread. There's a really anti-sliced bread movement for years. It's a great
idea. Hates bread.
I would tell you to avoid that also.
Democracy. People hated democracy for a long time. It's a great idea.
We don't do
politics. When polio came out, lots of people hated vaccines.
You know, these are the things.
Get with the vaccine program.
Brilliant ideas people hate.
Gentlemen, Baylor women's head basketball coach Kim Mulkey had this to say about the Final Four in COVID testing.
They need to dump the COVID testing. Wouldn't it be a shame to keep COVID testing and then you got kids that end up having test positive or something and they don't get to play in a Final Four? So you need to just forget the COVID test and let the four teams that are playing in each Final Four go battle it out.
Gentlemen, I ask you, shot or no shot, you see any logic in this statement whatsoever?
No, I'd like to congratulate Kim Mulkey for being a hell of a player at Louisiana Tech, where she played for Leon Barmore. I know far too much about women's basketball. I'm going that far back. She's been a hell of a coach at Baylor, and that is the most ignorant, stupid thing I have ever heard a coach say. And there's been some doozies.
It's very dumb. It's like looking at the astronauts and going, hey, you know, you've had a great flight to the moon. On your way back, we're going to dump this heat shield. You don't need it.
Correct.
It's cool.
Correct.
Everything's fine. Like, what are you talking about?
Kim Mulkey, you just need to stop talking.
Total nonsense.
Danny.
And they let her shape the minds of 18 to 22-year-old women.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, this might be my favorite story of the day. You guys familiar with Chopped on the Food Network? The show
Chopped? Oh, absolutely.
Heard
Love
of it.
Chopped.
I haven't watched it.
It's the baskets, and you get secret ingredients and tools and stuff, and you got to figure it out from there, right?
Correct. You have Chopped. Secret ingredients, so it's like octopus eyes, fava beans, and red wine, and you have to make a dish with that.
A secret ingredient is more Iron Chef. The basket.
It's three
ingredients that need to be used.
Also,
so.
You know what needs to be said? Alton Brown does the play-by-play for Iron Chef. Alton Brown is one of the best play-by-play guys working today.
I will co-sign
that. Go watch the show.
I will co-sign that.
He
There's
is
no question.
One of the best play-by-play men working today.
And his show, Good Eats.
So good.
Very good also.
So good.
And the fact that Cap says he's aware of the show, Chop, but he's never seen it is also mind-blowing.
We'll take it. That's a win.
Why? I don't watch a lot of television. You know that. I'm not the guy who's got a bunch of shows.
Cap, I have zero shows and zero time to watch TV, but I've seen that one. I mean, like, there's certain things you've just
I watch Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. That's about it for me on the Food Network.
That's a good show.
It's a...
You don't even have to be a guy. I mean, I'm not a Guy Fieri fan, really, but what's he
I love
done?
Guy
you know
Fieri.
What I heard?
What's he ever done? Be cool and give money to people plus jobs?
He's cool.
This is what I heard about Guy Fieri, and I don't know if it's true, so I'm going to say allegedly. But I heard allegedly when he goes to those restaurants, before they film, it's like an all-out party. Like, they are liquored up.
I'd buy that.
Now, this is allegedly. I don't know it for a fact. But I heard that that's his move. Like, it's party time, and now we're going to record.
I'd buy that.
I mean, that's just good producing.
That's a good question. Yeah.
What do you want, a great show or an okay show?
I mean, better content. Everybody's lubed up a little bit. There's no doubt about it. Looser tongues?
No question. We should do that here.
So my question for you guys is, this is the greatest thing the Food Network is ever doing. They're having it's like a reboot of Chopped. They're not getting rid of Chopped, but they're having Chopped 420. And one of the ingredients that they all have to use
marijuana.
Is marijuana. Shot or no shot, either of you will watch that show and take home a recipe.
100% all in. I took a marijuana cooking class.
That's basically what this is. The best is for those judges that have to eat the food.
I like the idea of a marijuana cooking class.
They did
like
up at one of the dispensaries. My son and I went.
It's scheduled to last 30 minutes, but goes on for 3 hours.
Correct.
Okay. Inside the basket, there's marijuana, Cool Ranch Doritos, and Hot Pockets.
We're all really good at starting the recipe, but nobody actually ever finishes the dish.
Yeah, they taught you how to make this taco dip.
Tonight, we'll be making Chilean sea bass and a red wine reduction, and everyone just ends up eating fistfuls of Velveeta.
Correct. Bags of Bugles are all over the place.
Contestants are sitting on the couch. Something burning?
Is that supposed I don't think so. Is something is the roof on? I know this sounds weird. We're here to just cook and whatnot, but is the roof on? All right, I'm good. I'm fine.
Crazy.
Everything's
Danny.
Fine.
Danny.
Cap, do you ever sneak any cannabis into your food at home that you cook? I mean, we know you are pro-cannabis.
I do not. One of my kids, who's in his 30s, likes to cook. He makes a bunch of different things. I've never sampled anything other than his cookies, but he's made other stuff.
What is the judging criteria? Like, is it how well you hide the taste of marijuana in the food, or are you supposed to make the in the Chopped show, right? Are you supposed to make it stand out?
Like, have you ever cooked with it?
Well, yeah, it's supposed
no.
Like, you don't just take like the chocolate chip cookie dough and just drop a bunch of marijuana into it. No, it's a whole process.
You got it. What you do is
you infuse that way, right? But it would work that way.
You even need to cook the cookie dough.
You infuse the butter. Like if you're making the cookies, right? You melt the sticks of butter on the stove, then you put the cannabis in the butter, and you kind of infuse the butter.
Okay.
You kind of got to let it
make it a truffle.
And it's not in there for like 2 minutes. Like it's a whole process where you reduce it down and then pour that into your batter.
But is that to get the taste out of the food, or to get the THC out of
the whole package?
Okay. The THC out. Because if you have a really good pot cookie, you taste the cannabis. I mean, you can't avoid it.
Yeah, you'll get a little bit of the taste.
Of course. I mean, it's an ingredient.
Correct.
You can't bury all
of
the
some of those things, like
meal.
You get a chocolate chip cookie, you don't eat the whole cookie. You eat like a quarter of the cookie and you're flying.
Well, that's the hard part because you don't know how potent they are, right? And it takes a longer time for you to feel the effects. So if you eat a whole cookie and then a half hour later you're like, man, I don't feel anything, and you eat another cookie,
yeah,
you're in for a long day.
Apparently, I'm told that's the mistake everybody makes when they're eating the stuff. It's like you have a little bit and you're like, oh, I'm fine. I'll have a little more.
Right.
That's the don't do it.
Someone that used to work on this show, I will not out that person.
Whoever it happened to.
Worked at this station. He gave his wife a piece of a chocolate chip cookie. His wife is very thin. He's like, just eat this little, like an eighth. And an hour later, she's like, I'm not feeling anything. Give me that. And ate like the whole cookie.
Disaster.
He's like, oh, God, you didn't just do that. And an hour after that, she literally was on the couch for 12 hours. Couldn't move. Could not move.
Probably had a nice time.
Yeah. No question.
Never wanted to be on that couch for 12 hours.
All right. Don't forget, Crosstalk with the Carmen and Yurko show's coming up at 10. We will be right back with some Deshaun Watson news.
David Kaplan.
Jonathan Hood.
Our new morning show. This is Cap and Jay Hood.
On ESPN 1000.
And the ESPN Chicago app.
So Nick Caserio is the new general manager of the Houston Texans, and he has been consistent, as has the owner, Cal McNair. We are not trading Deshaun Watson. And they've been getting phone calls and voicemails. I'll give you this. Call me back. I want to get him. And he's saying consistently, no. Now we're up to 19 suits have been filed against Deshaun Watson for inappropriate behavior with masseuses. A 20th one, Danny was talking about earlier this morning. The 20th one is not represented by Tony Busby, the Better Call Saul-like attorney down in Houston. She has not retained counsel yet, except to use a civil rights expert, I believe. I think he is an attorney, but he's not. They haven't filed any type of a grievance or a claim, but she sat down with Sports Illustrated, and what she portrayed was pretty graphic, pretty brutal of how he behaved. And now Nick Caserio was asked, how are the Texans handling Watson now? in light of all these accusations?
We're certainly cognizant and aware. We made a statement at the beginning about where the organization stood. I would say it's a legal situation. It's a legal process. So we're certainly respectful of that. We certainly take them very seriously. The allegations or what's been discussed are certainly troubling. And organizationally, that's not something that we can condone, that we condone those types of actions. But again, we'll let the legal process take care of itself. And however it's going to unfold, we'll certainly comply and do what we can to help and facilitate a resolution for everybody.
So we don't condone those kinds of actions. Like, that's pretty strong language if all of this is totally untrue, right?
Yeah, I mean, some of the reporting on this continues. I'm reading from the SI piece where Watson's attorney, Rusty Hardin, has been talking to ESPN's Sarah Barshop on Monday that Watson has not deleted any Instagram messages over the last 2 weeks and categorically denied his contact, his
client.
Well,
does that mean he didn't delete anything before 2 weeks?
Yeah, he's saying, like a lot of people, Deshaun regularly deletes past Instagram messages, Hardin said. That said, he has not deleted any messages since March 15th, the day before the first lawsuit was filed. We categorically deny that he has reached out directly to his accusers in an attempt to settle these cases.
I mean,
I don't know where that leaves 19 different lawsuits.
Correct.
Well, I think this now, with this most recent article by Jenny Venters of SI, it's making it less and less believable from Deshaun Watson's point of view.
Correct.
Like, in the court of public opinion, this is making it harder and harder. Like, especially because the person who Jenny Venters interviewed, she has the alias Mary because she doesn't want to have to deal with any backlash from just speaking out. So they call her Mary in the article, and she's not part of the lawsuit right now. And so the fact that she's not amongst the other 19, I think it becomes harder and harder now for the NFL and Deshaun Watson to just move along. You know, even if he settles this and there's some NDAs and we don't find anything out, it's getting to the point where you have to wonder if Deshaun Watson will be suspended no matter what, just because of the NFL's personal conduct policy.
That's kind of my thought here too, Jeff, is that at this point, now that the general manager of the ball club has spoken out, it kind of feels like it clears the way for the NFL to make a statement of some kind, I suppose, or even a determination on where, how, and when he can play again or resume any kind of team activity.
Like, if they called you right now, said, Jeff, it's Nick. All right, you know what? My owners tell me we got to move on. I'll give him to you. Give me a 1 and a 2, way less than you thought. You can have him. What do you do?
What's your price to have a deal with the devil? You don't know I don't know the intricacies. I don't think if you're an NFL team, you can trade for Deshaun Watson right now.
Right. If they said, hey, guess what? We're releasing him. You can't sign him. Till you know the outcome of this, the stain you could put on your franchise, if all this is true?
Well, even then, there are a handful of teams, not just in football, that have brought in players that have already served discipline and regretted doing so.
Correct. It's a different world today, man.
I think, yeah, because it's an open case right now. And again, it's 19 accusers and this 20th account from the SI piece. And, you know, we don't know if there are any more that are about to come out as well. This clearly is establishing some type of pattern. And now the question is, you know, can you wrap your head around the idea that Deshaun Watson is in some way not culpable? I mean, this is a lot of accusations. And again, when it's separate now, it's no longer, it's another person who's no longer involved with the civil lawsuit. It's starting to look worse and worse for Deshaun Watson.
Right. Like, oh my goodness. And now the GM, we don't condone that behavior. Like, that's strong for the GM to come out and say that about his franchise quarterback, which leads you to believe there is at least some truth here.
Well, I mean, believe women, right? I mean, that's kind of the conversation we're all having right now. I think it's really important that those voices are heard and
right,
that we're understanding of what's at stake here for those involved. I, you know, Nick Caserio talking today, really to me, just kind of it leads me to believe that whatever the NFL and team investigation looks like, he now has more solid footing to go out and say something like that.
No question. That's
at a certain point where he now is, I guess, has the intelligence he'd like to go say something.
All right, we'll crosstalk with Carmen DeFalco in exactly 2 minutes.